we live here in Costa Rica, and I saw one other barefoot runner at one of the races, which is a rare thing even in the States. But, you know, when I'm running around the neighborhood, you know, it's like, oh, that's a local gringo. You know, they think I'm nuts, but friends that I run with ask me, what is the reason that you're going barefoot? And I tell them, it's like, it's biomechanics. I'm just trying to treat my body as correctly as I can so that I can run for as long as I can.
You're listening to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, and this is Trail Talk, where we have casual conversations with all kinds of runners. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultra runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation will go. So if you're ready, let's get started. Hey, welcome to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast. This episode is a little bit different. Instead of recording it on Zoom, I am doing a YouTube live presentation, and my guest today is Jim Lane. He is I saw him on one of the running groups on Facebook, and he has a YouTube channel, which is part of the reason why we're here on YouTube, to help promote his channel. So if you want to look him up later on YouTube, it's under the Wandering Gringos. Wandering Gringos. I'm going to say that. So that not like you're clueless and wondering what's happening. You're wandering around the world. So, Wandering Gringos. Jim Lane, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Eric.
Hey, one of the things I try to do. I mean, there's a lot of, I know a little bit about you, so we'll have the conversation go that way. But usually, what I ask my guests to do is start out with, tell us a little bit about yourself and how did you get started as a runner?
Okay, grew up in the Ozarks down in a little town called Ava, Missouri, and joined the military right out of high school. Of course, we did running there. I was in the 10th Mountain Light Infantry. Did that for 3 years. And then when I got out of the Army, I joined the Springfield Fire Department and worked there for 22 years. But I wasn't, up until the point that I was 36, I was not a runner. You know, I had ran in the military, really didn't want to do that anymore. I had problems with shin splints. I had problems with my knees and just, you know, there were other things to do. A friend of mine forced me, and she did. She forced me to read this book called Born to Run. And she's like, you have to read this. So I read it, and I'm like, I'm not a big sports fan. I don't like running, but sure. So I was at the fire station. It was September 9th of 2009. I remember the date. I had just finished this book, Born to Run. Mm-hmm. I said, this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life. I mean, seriously, what idiot was going to take their shoes off and run? Because I was raised that if you had your shoes off, if you were barefoot, that was kind of a sign of poverty. So my parents were, you know, you always had, you know, New Balance shoes or something like that. And of course, the military, always had your boots on. But anyway, I'm sitting there, I finished the book, and I'm like, I'm curious. I was just, because the logic was there, the biomechanics and the reasoning why. So it was like 8 o'clock at night. I took my shoes and my socks off. I walked down to I walked out of the fire station. I had my radio with me, and I went to run around the block. I ended up running a mile. Now, my form was terrible. My feet felt like somebody put a flamethrower on them. all the nerves, you know. Mm-hmm. But I finished it, and I was just like, wow, there could be something to this, you know. So for the next 6 months, I practiced on my own. And, you know, if I get a blister, then I knew my form was wrong. And I had to completely, when I was in the Army, I was one of those guys you could hear coming a half mile away. Very prominent heel striker.
Okay.
Very prominent. So I had to relearn. And I scoured the internet, man. I mean, everything, Barefoot Ken Bob, anybody who had written something, I was looking it up. So I'm learning this whole technique of lift at the knees, never push, no friction. Whatever you do, don't put any friction down. And over the course of this, about 6 months, I got to where I could run a 5K, and I could do it on, you know, nasty, you know, gravel, asphalt roads, and I was slow, but I could do it. And my knees didn't hurt, my ankles didn't hurt, and I was feeling pretty good. So anyway, that's what was started, was that silly book.
Okay, so you started off, I mean, you didn't like start in shoes and make the transition to barefoot running. You weren't a runner, and you started running barefoot.
No. Yes, I went directly to that, yes.
Okay, wow.
I think they gave me an advantage.
How so?
Well, because, okay, if I was like, let's say I had been training, and I'm like, okay, I can crank out, you know, let's say a 9-minute mile, and I know how fast it takes me to go around a certain route. I take off my shoes and socks, and I'm relearning. I can't compete with what I was before, just because I'm learning something new. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have that in my way. You know, I could sit there. And it was all new to me. So anytime, hey, I'd gone 2 miles. Yes, you know. I did 2 miles and I don't have a blister and I feel okay. So I had nothing to gauge myself to previously.
Okay. Okay.
So I think in a way that was an advantage.
Yeah. Psychologically, you know, making the transition to barefoot, I mean, that for people, you know, I can just speak to my experience. When I decided to do it, you know, I was used to running ultramarathons, and you know, when I'm, in fact, I just come off of my first 100 mile race, and successfully finished, and that's what the fact that I'd injured my foot running on gravel, and recovered from that injury, and I says I'm gonna make the transition, and so going out and like all I can do is a little over a mile and a half. And my feet felt okay, and I wasn't running on asphalt, and my feet felt okay. My form was okay. Mm-hmm. But when I quit, then I realized, okay, now they're sore. And so I could actually run, even on my feet, I could run farther, on the run, but, farther than I really should. And so I was having to really monitor very carefully, because my body was like, yeah, let's go. And my feet were like, okay, yeah, we're in. And then, you know, you go too far, and, you know, for a couple of days, you're like, oh, I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah. Did you ever get the top of the foot pain? The tendons on the top of the foot get sore?
That's what happened in my race.
Oh.
It felt like someone had put a knife in the top of my foot and drug it up my leg.
Oh, yeah. I've been an ache, like a small ache on the top of the foot. You're talking something totally different. Ouch.
Yeah, it was. I think my foot, you know, it was. I was wearing a Hoka Speed Goats, and I had loosened them, but not enough. And they were, you know, I've got a wide foot, and they were kind of narrow. And you know, it was one of those things. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, it was it. That's what it, I injured something in the top of my foot. But I have not. Since switching to barefoot and minimalist, you know, running in sandals, I haven't had top of the foot pain.
Yeah, okay. So that's when I first started off, if I pushed too hard, I would get an ache on the top of the foot, and that's when I knew, okay, you know, back off a little bit, let the body get stronger. And but since like I said, that was 2009 when I started. And I had never done a race. Uh-huh. You know, I had never gone to I guess it was the following summer. I talked myself into doing my first race. And I mean, like I'm 36, I'm driving to this race. I was supposed to do a 10K, and it was like on this little asphalt trail. And I'm not joking. I almost talked myself out of going, because I didn't know what runners were like. You know, I'm like, I'm expecting when I drove up, I thought, okay, everybody's going to be like 6 foot plus. They're going to be like lean like gazelles, and they're all going to go so fast. And they will know that I don't belong, you mm-hmm. know? Mm-hmm. And so I pulled up to the race, and I was wearing New Balance because I wasn't about to let anybody know I ran barefoot because I hadn't gotten over that yet. Uh-huh. And now I don't care. But at the time, you know, oh no. So I had put this old pair of New Balance tennis shoes on. We pulled up, and oh my goodness, there's men and women every size and shape. And I'm like, oh, this is cool. So, you know, you get in line and man, everybody's talking and they're having fun. And you just, there was a camaraderie there. So I started off, I did the 10K, and I didn't know, it was actually a half marathon. You go out and you come back, and there was a turnaround point for the 10K. Well, I got to the 10K part, and I still felt good, so I just kept going. And they're like, oh, honey, you're supposed to turn around. It's like, no, I'm just feeling really motivated, and and they let me go. And so, which was really kind of them. So anyway, I ended up doing the half marathon. I got a bunch of blisters on my feet because I wasn't used to wearing shoes. And, but I finished it. And at the end of that race, I was talking with some of the people there. It was funny because I was watching all these other runners. The first thing they did when they got done with the run was rip their shoes off and sit down in the grass.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I'm talking with them and they're like, oh, if you think this is great, you need to try trail running. Okay. So that's when I signed up for, it was my first ultra marathon. That was the Dogwood Canyon 50K, which I did a few months later. That it was that fall. It was my first race. It was an eye-opening experience. I mean, everybody was just so nice. Mm-hmm. And it was a good time.
So it was on, you said you were running on asphalt trails. So were there a lot of trail runners there then that have just.
Yeah, they, and so like when we finished the race, I'm like, hey, this is great. This was a lot of fun. And they're like, oh, this is nothing. You need to get on an actual trail. And I'm like, they do that? Okay. And then they're like, oh yeah, there's this little race called Dogwood Canyon. Yeah, you need to try that one. I had no idea what I was getting into. Have you ever done that race, the Dogwood Canyon 50K?
No, I have not. I'm trying to, because there's quite a few, you know, in southern Missouri, there's a lot of mm-hmm. trail races. And I think, was it Twisted Fork? Was that one of them that was down there? I can't remember.
Missouri or Northern Arkansas?
It could be Northern Arkansas. I have some friends. I knew they were down in the Ozarks going, and they ran, and it was a. They said it was a pretty tough course, and so I would imagine Dogwood Canyon could be. I mean, I'm familiar with the hills of Missouri, so.
Yes, there's a couple of them, the hills where you're like going, why did I do this? but it's a really good course. Yeah, if you ever get a chance, try it out. You'll like it. It's a good one.
yeah. Is that the one that's probably about 50 miles to the east of Branson? Is that Dogwood
Canyon? You're going south and actually a little bit. You're going south of Branson, then you go a little bit to the west. And part of the course, you actually cross over into Arkansas.
Okay.
The guy that owned Bass Pro bought, I don't know, it's like 20,000 acres. It's huge. And it's in Arkansas and Missouri.
Okay.
So
I'll have to check that. I'll have to check that out. It's like, I mean,
it's good. Yes. But I've done I ran that in the Vibram Five Fingers, and I've ran it in the Luna Sandals on the 50K. I've done the 50K there three times. I ran the 15K. They do a thing where it's like 15K on Saturday and a 25K on Sunday.
Okay.
And I've done the back-to-back there barefoot. I'm sure other people have done it barefoot now. At the time, I was the only one who'd ever done it barefoot. But it's really good. It's like Jeep Trail. A lot of it is Jeep Trail. Mm-hmm. It's just rough.
Yeah. Now, my experience with the Ozarks is that there are a lot of rocks and like flint sometimes too. So what is that like barefoot? I mean, if you ran it fully barefoot, that's that seems to me like more than I'd want to do.
It's tricky. You're always using your eyes. I mean, trail running, people think, I'm running around and look at the beautiful vista. Well, if you're looking around, you're going to fall down. Mm-hmm. So your focus is right in front of you. And so I'm usually trying to pick my path on avoiding anything that's obviously going to cause me pain. The flint or chert have not been a problem. I've never been cut doing that. But man, whenever they dump chat gravel down, I hate chat gravel. I ran the only time I've done a barefoot marathon was the Heart of America marathon, a marathon in Columbia. Mm-hmm. There's a Heart of America marathon. And I forget which mile we were on, but we come around a corner, we hit an intersection, and they just poured fresh chat gravel for like a mile. And that's my nemesis, because it's one thing to land on it with your forepad.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's flexible. But when it rolls up into your arch, I hate that feeling. And chat is really bad about that. And these were big. They were big pieces of chat.
Chat tends to be sharp edges.
Yes. Yeah. Now, like I said, I've never been cut, but you'll get that poke like in between the joints of the toe. That's uncomfortable. And then if you get a piece that rolls and then the part rolls up into that arch, I don't like that feeling at all. Because usually, I mean, and you know this, I mean, usually whenever you're running barefoot, it's not an uncomfortable thing.
No.
I mean, the different textures of the ground, be asphalt, new concrete, old concrete, whatever, chip and seal, or gravel. It's like different flavors of ice cream. You like some flavors better than you like other flavors, but it's usually not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get to talk to a lot of other barefoot runners, but whenever you get a spot that's particularly rough, my cadence increases. I'm trying to, as fast as I can, to land as light as I can to cross that section. That to me is that's when the time to speed up.
Mm-hmm.
Get over it and get past it. But chat gravel is one of the things I dislike it very much.
most of my barefoot running is on, if I'm on trails, I usually have some sort of sandal on. And so most of my barefoot running is on sidewalks. The thing that gets me is there will be a little piece of gravel, and I'll step on it once, and it then sticks to my foot. And so every time I land, it's right there. And I was like scuffing my foot, trying to get it dislodged. And usually it only lasts for like five steps or so if I let it go, but it's like those five steps. Like, oh, please. And
it's like, is it still there? Yep. It's still there.
It's still there. Yeah.
Hold on a second. There we go. You have to excuse me. My gimbal died. We'll just do it this way.
Okay. 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 that's fine.
But the, you have to scrape it off, and because you get that pad built up, and so a little piece of rock will go up there and it'll just kind of stay for a while.
And it's I mean, you've got the pad, and so as far as the it's not terrible, but you can feel it. I mean, people think you've got tough feet because you're running barefoot. It's like those nerves are still there, and you're still so it's different.
Well, you ever have people, oh, your feet must be so calloused.
Yeah. No, they're not. No.
Yeah. I mean, my wife calls them like puppy pads. She's like, she goes, yeah, because they're not calloused. They're thicker. The skin's thicker, but it's not like some, you know, like those nasty old calluses you get on in shoes right out next to your big toe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, not like that. Not like that. Yeah. There's a little bit more skin, and it's a lot like leather. So.
Yes. Yeah. Very much so. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, and then I don't know if you ended up doing this. I'd gotten where I could run barefoot, and I really enjoyed it, and I got addicted, and, you know, where I just, you know, I was wanting to see, you know, how far I could go. And then I got to where I wanted to wear minimal shoes during the day. So I was wearing like a, basically kind of like a moccasin or like a five toe or something like that. I don't even know if Luna's were out yet, but I was walking down a hallway. My wife worked at the hospital. I was walking down one of those tall hallways, and I'm hearing this like a bongo beat in the background of my ear. And I'm like, what is that sound? And I realized it was my heel. Even though I ran on my forefoot, I was still walking and heel striking.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, maybe, you know, maybe I need to switch that. And so I actually it was actually harder learning how to walk on my forefoot than it was learning how to run barefoot. And I worked on it. And again, it was like another 6 months. I worked on it. So now whenever, when I'm walking, I land pretty much like I land when I'm barefoot running. The heel touches, mm-hmm. but it's that front section behind the pinky toe, that pad there, lands first, rolls over, and then the heel will settle.
Okay. Yeah.
And which is fun because, you know, you can put on like headphones and you can tell somebody, okay, you know, walk across this floor and they'll hear that bongo beat, you know, cause the headphones have, you know, kind of enclosed that. And then you're like, okay, now try it like this,
mm-hmm.
you know, land on your forefoot. And they're like, the sound's gone,
yeah.
you know, cause you lose that impact. So,
yeah. And I've working on my certification to become a Qi running instructor. And so, mm-hmm. I've been working on my form, and I've got pictures from my last 50K, which we ended up running on asphalt. And I looked at all of my pictures and I was like, my form, I need to work. I still need more work on my form. Cause my yeah. So, but yes, I do that walking as well. It's for me, I mean, I tell people it's a mental thing, because I know so many runners that, you know, they put on music and their mind is just off, you know, and so for me, when I run, yeah. my mind, it's a mental discipline to just be focusing on what's happening in my body almost all the time. And I was doing that even in shoes, but even more so now that I'm a minimalist runner. And so I'm trying to be aware of how my foot's striking, and in order to develop that, I did it even when I was walking. If I'm just walking across the room, I try to just bring myself here and be present where I'm at, so that I can feel what's going on in my body. Because unless it's a habit, you know, as shown by my pictures, you know, my habits need to be refined a little bit more. And so I'm working on that again. And so it's a continual process for me.
Absolutely. I think you're absolutely right. Cause a lot, you know, people, they put on the headphones to get their brain into the zone that they want to get it to, which I understand. But whenever I do that, my form goes to crap,
mm-hmm.
because I'm hitting the ground harder. I'm noticed that I'm not paying attention to my turnover. And if I don't have headphones on, which I mean, it's very rare that I'll put on a set of headphones. I'm listening the entire time, because if I can hear myself, mm-hmm. I'm doing something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you, like you're saying, you really have to be in tune with your body, or like if you're going along and all of a sudden you get a little twinge somewhere, okay, then you're going to go back up. Okay, what am I doing wrong? All right, lifting at the knees, lowering the hips, relax. Is my cadence fast enough? And then all of a sudden that little twinge will just go away,
mm-hmm.
you know? But yeah, that's why it's kind of, I've never played golf, but they're always talking about getting that perfect swing,
yes.
you know? I think barefoot running is the same way. You're, mm-hmm. you're looking for that perfect stride and cadence.
Yeah. Except for in golf, you only need to do that for a few seconds when you're running, for me, when I'm running, I mean, it's not constant, but I'm always checking in. My mind will go somewhere else but then I bring back and I'm checking in with my body, checking. And it's just kind of a continual process. And for me, it's not boring. It's like a meditation. But yeah, I know a lot of people, you know, they deal with it differently. Their mind is off somewhere else and they just kind of let their body go on autopilot. And I mean, I've put in a plug for barefoot running. The shoe industry's allowed people to do that.
Yeah.
Because the shoes will cover a lot of form, you know, will allow people to run in whatever form they want. That's just, and you don't have to think. So,
and that's my thing. It's like I've seen people who have good form, perfectly mm-hmm. fine form in shoes, Hokas, whatever, and they have perfectly fine form, and that's great. But that's the exception.
I've also seen
people running, you know, and I've seen people running in. You ever go to a race and see somebody and they've got their Vibram Five Fingers or they've got their sandals on, and as they're coming in, as they're running, you can hear them heel striking anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me cringe. It's like, oh, dude, that's not what this is about. You know, you're going to wreck yourself like this.
Yeah, and you do that for a 50K, and you will hurt. You'll end up, you know, being pretty sore afterwards.
Oh my gosh, yeah, that's. Yeah. Because you know, of course, we live here in Costa Rica. And I saw one other barefoot runner at one of the races, which is a rare thing even in the States. But you know, when I'm running around the neighborhood, you know, it's like, oh, that's a local gringo. they think I'm nuts. But you know, the friends that I run with asked me, they're like, okay, why are you? What is the reason that you're going barefoot? And I tell them, it's like it's biomechanics. I'm just trying to treat my body as correctly as I can so that I can run for as long as I can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. That's what it comes down to for me is biomechanics.
Right.
This is how I was designed. I think I was designed to run this way.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So after you ran your first 50K, then what did you do? What was your running like after that? And you did that. You said you did that in Five Fingers, Vibram Five Fingers, or
yeah, I did that in Five Fingers. I've ran that. We started doing things. My wife was like, "Okay, so let's go to other areas and have short family vacations. We'll take the kids. You know, I have a daughter and a son." And she was all about it. She was like, "Okay, let's go on family vacations and do runs." So we, you know, I've done the Leadville Marathon. I attempted the Leadville 100 and I went to do the Leadville 100 and dude, I made it past Twin Lakes. I'm going up Hope's Pass. I missed the cutoff at Hope's Pass by 2 minutes.
Wow.
And so I'm struggling up this mountain and, you know, you can't breathe. And this, I mean, the dude was nice, but he walked up to me, he goes, "Sir, I'm very sorry, but you missed the cutoff by 2 minutes and we can't let you go." So he puts this big red X on my table. So I was the first one. So I turned around, and as I'm doing the march of defeat back down Hopes, all these other runners are coming up and they're seeing that X. Dude, it was like I was the Grim Reaper. Oh, it was horrible. They just would just collapse. You know, I'll never forget this one poor lady. I think she was from Japan because she didn't speak English, but she saw that and she just started wailing. It was awful. Oh. But I ran anyway. I ended up running 50 milers in Mississippi and Illinois, down in more 50Ks. And then I ended up running, I ran all the races at the Hawk, the marathon, the 50 miler, and the 100 miler. And that's where I finally got my 100, was it with the Hawk. And I mean, those guys in Lawrence, Kansas, they're amazing.
Yes.
They're so good. And I'm sure you've noticed this too. There's a crazy thing that happens on the trail where you'll meet people and they will give you water. They will give you the stuff off their back. They will help you. They will tell you their life story, but you'll never know their name. You know, it's just who you're beside at the time. Ultra runners, that's got to be one of the best communities I've ever met. My buddy who was coaching me on my 100, his name's David Murphy. He's actually in charge of the Idiots Running Club, if you've ever heard of them.
No, I've not heard of them.
Idiots Running Club. I mean, it's the Idiots Running Club, we take ourselves very seriously. To join, you have to, you know, promise to, you know, you have to turn around three times, spit over your shoulder, and if you ever decide to quit a race, it's because you either had A, nothing left, or you died. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the runners are from back of the pack to people who are amazingly fast. Just a really great group of people. They're on Facebook. But anyway, David was in Arkansas when I was doing my 100. And he literally jumped in his truck, drove through Arkansas, back through Missouri, up into Lawrence, Kansas, to show up at 75 miles and run the last 25 with me.
Wow.
And I'm not joking. I was, oh my gosh, I was toast, because I have this thing that whenever the sun starts to come back up, it messes with my brain. I can get through the night, no problem. But when the sun starts to come up, I just get so tired. Mm-hmm. And it's like when I drive too. But David was sitting there doing this 25 mile loop with me. And, you know, he's just kind of encouraged me along, and, you know, hey, you know, you, because I had hit mile 83, and I was in a low point. I mean, I was like, you get to that point where you're like, I don't care about a buckle.
Yeah.
I don't care about the.
Well, and that was about the time you had to go up over Bunker Hill at mile 83 for the last time.
Yeah. And so we come up to that aid station, and I'm like, he goes, hey man, if you decide to quit, I understand. He said, but you're never going to forgive yourself. And I'm like, I'm not quitting. I said, but I can't go to that aid station. Would you mind grabbing me a few things? So he did. So he does the long walk around that field with me and comes back to that aid station. And I mean, I'm just miserable. I hadn't been able to run. I just could not get my legs to work. Well, we passed that aid station again on Bunker Hill, and there's about a 60 yard straightaway through the woods. And I'm just like, I have to start running again, because we were at probably 28 hours at that point. And so I started running again, but I made it to the end of that section, and I'm like, hey, I can run. What if I made it the next 6 miles to that next aid station? So I just kept pushing, and I started singing "This Little Light of Mine," you know, the
mm-hmm. yeah, little light yeah. of mine. Mm-hmm.
I started belting that out, and I started passing people, and everything changed. Dave was behind me whooping and hollering. We hit that next aid station, which was the last one. I don't even stop. I just blow through, singing at the top of my lungs. There was a guy there by the name of Bob Hall who had been ahead of me, and he was sitting in the chair, and he was done. And I guess I come running through there doing that, because I was having my high moment, and he goes, Well, that's bullcrap. I'm going to catch you. So I'm running and singing. David's behind me whooping and hollering. At like 3 miles later, Bob Hall passed me. And we got up to like a mile or two out, and we looked at the watch, and we were at 29 hours and something. And David Murphy told me, he goes, "Hey, you know, I don't want to bring up the elephant in the room." And I'm like, "Yeah, no, you're right. We can beat 30. We can break 30. And so I came in at 29 hours and 39 minutes. Bob Hall was a couple minutes ahead of me. And at the end of the race, I'm sitting in one chair, and Bob Hall's over here in the other chair. And he's like, "Thank you." I'm like, but it was but anyway, the point of that, bringing that up, was I'd have never made it without the friends and the support and the people who were out there. There were two other people who ran with me through the night past mile 50. The community, the ultra running community, is just such a wonderful group of people. You know, the support was amazing. Mm-hmm. But
so you did your first 100. Did you then go on and do other hundreds after that, or were you?
I did that 100, and then at that point, that was in 2015, and at that point, I did several other ultras, like 50 milers and 50 Ks. I didn't do another 100. I've still got the itch to try Leadville again. That's kind of the one buckle I'd like to have.
Mm-hmm.
But I was running other races and then getting ready for our move here, because we started planning for our move to Costa Rica. We moved here in 2017, and that was 2015. So time was getting short.
Okay.
Because we had all of our stuff to sell. We had our house to sell. I had to get everything squared away with my pension, retire from the fire department, get all that stuff to work so that we could come down here. Okay. And I was busy.
So I wanted to ask, what was the draw to go to Costa Rica? What was your process to pick up and say, okay, we're gonna leave Missouri and gonna head down to Costa Rica?
You know, it was whenever we went to Colorado in 2011 to do the Leadville Marathon. I think it was 2011. Whenever we did that, I fell in love with the climate of the Colorado in the summertime. And that's when the first time it hit me. It's like, you know, I'm six years away from where I can buy my military time back and retire. We don't have to stay in Missouri, you know, where you get all four seasons in one day.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to be somewhere where, you know, you've got to put, you know, tons of pesticides on your body just to go through the woods. Because where I was at, the ticks were horrible. And so I asked my wife, I said, "Hey, what do you think about maybe going to another country? Because, I mean, with the pension check, you can't survive in the States without having another job." And I said, "What do you think about going somewhere where we can live off the check?" And my wife was game. She's just like, "Hey, do the research and let's find out." So we looked, you know, Ecuador, Peru, Nicaragua. We looked at some of the European countries. But Costa Rica has been stable since 1948. And though it's not the cheapest Central American country, it was socially and economically stable.
Mm-hmm.
And so we decided, we visited Costa Rica it was 2015. We visited Costa Rica, and we had met two different families that were expats in a town about an hour away from here. And we enjoyed what we did. We drove around. We really liked the country. We really liked the laid-back attitude everybody had. And so in 2017, November 30th, we moved into Palmares, which is where I'm at right now, Costa Rica. We didn't know anybody for – we knew those other two families about an hour away, but we didn't know anybody here at all. And we're about the only gringo family in this town of around 10,000. So to get back to what you asked, the reason why we moved was I wanted a better climate. I wanted to have my windows and doors open all year long, and I did not want to get stale. I knew you never grow if you're comfortable. So I knew I couldn't be comfortable. I had to have something that where I was pushing myself a little bit, you know, and learning a new culture, learning a new language, the highs and lows of, you know, trying to get residency processes and just figuring out, like, when COVID hit here, I actually had to fly back to the States because my dad was on hospice. And so there was, you know, my wife was having to take care of our son here, having groceries delivered to the house because we were on lockdown, you know. So there's all these different little challenges of being an expat that have been good because I've yet to be bored. So that's better climate, not being bored, having challenges. That's pretty much the reason.
Okay.
You know, it wasn't like a political or social economical reason or anything like that. It was just needed new adventures. So.
Well, and that's, I think there's a lot of people who dream of having adventures like that, but there's, I mean, there's a mindset that a lot of us have is that we want adventure, but not too much. and you know, ultramarathon's kind of that way. I mean, it seems, you know, other people here, you know, you go out and run 100 miles, you go out and run in the woods, you know, it seems like, oh, this big thing. But once you've done it, it was like, but it is still a pretty safe, it's a pretty safe activity, you know.
and the thing is, it's so, I was talking with Lua, there's a lady I was running with this morning. And of course, my Spanish is horrible, but you know, she doesn't speak any English, so we were talking in Spanish. And I guess at one point she had been bigger, and so she, you know, she goes to the gym 3 days a week. She runs the other 4 days a week, and I'm like, oh my goodness! And she's 40. Lua is 46. Yeah, Lua's 46, and I'm like, oh my goodness, Lua. I mean, good grief! You're so strong to do that. I mean, because the fitness that we're doing is functional stuff. So I mean, this lady's working her butt off, and she goes, I have been doing this for years. She goes, this is part of my life. This is who I am. This is my heart. And I think that's so much better than going, well, let's see what's on, you know, what's the TV got going on tonight. I'm going to sit down, watch TV or come home from work and just, you know, my Costa Rican friends ask, they're like, well, you know, why did you leave the States? And I said, well, here I have a better standard of life because a lot of excess stuff has been taken out. You know, I don't have advertisements. I don't have, you know, commercials. I don't have the news media. You know, it's just not part of my life anymore. I don't miss it.
you could do that. I mean, you'd have access. I mean, you had access to the internet if you wanted to stay plugged in and do that.
I just found out the other day that I guess the president of Haiti was killed and stuff like that. You know, I just
I watched Netflix and like maybe something on Prime in the evening with my wife, but during the day, say hi to a few friends on Facebook, and there's a couple of bushcraft forums that I'm on because I do a lot of bushcraft stuff. But other than that,
so
it's
what,
pretty unplugged.
So what bushcraft, as in going out and being in the woods, is that
yeah,
what that means?
Making shelters, making bow drill fires, doing things like that. Like we're talking about, like not being bored. Our church works with a okay. So there is native tribes here in Costa Rica. There's six tribes. One of the tribes is called the Quebecer, and south of here, about 8 hours, is their reservation, their area, and basically no electricity down there. In this big, huge plot of jungle, there's about 10,000, they think, Quebecer. If somebody gets hurt, they have to – it's a swinging bridge, and the best way to describe it, think Indiana Jones, that swinging bridge. Okay. Where they have to cross that bridge because you can't get vehicles over there. And then the church has bought a side-by-side. They call it a mule. And we have a guy who – his name is Isaias. And SIS will meet them at the bridge, and he'll do triage because it could be snake bite. You know, we have the fertilance that here they call terciopelo. You know, mistakes from, you know, machete cuts. You know, there's skin funguses that happen here. There's respiratory problems with babies because they live in huts and they have the fires in the huts. So SIS will meet them at the bridge. It's a 9-kilometer drive through, they call it a road, but it's horrible. And he'll get them to a little town called Grano de Oro. And Grano de Oro is where the ambulance will come to. It's also where the electricity stops. And so the ambulance from the big city of Turrialba will come down the 2 hours to Grano de Oro. Isaias will pick up the injured Quebecer, the 9-kilometer trip, and get them there, and that way they can get to the hospital.
Okay.
So every then I'll go down there and I'll ride ambulance with him. So
I'm just curious. How do they get word out?
They have some shortwave radios.
Okay.
And believe it or not, cell phone towers are everywhere, and they've actually got areas there where they can get through with cell phone.
Okay.
I've also seen do things like, they'll call, or they'll find somebody who's on the road who's in a vehicle, and okay, whenever you get to town or whenever you get to where your cell phone works, you know, call for the ambulance.
Okay.
And that's how they'll do it. There was a lady who had given birth 8 days before. She couldn't move. She was in a lot of pain. Well, she hadn't delivered her placenta, and so she had an infection. So I'm with SIS, and we're driving. You know, there's no lights, there's no electricity. So we're driving down this road, and he says, okay, she's here. So he stops the rig. We step out. There's nothing. And he takes off down this trail. It's in the afternoon. He takes off down this trail. An hour later, we had passed 5 houses, single track trail along this ridgeline, and we got to where she was at. And she couldn't move, and she was in horrible pain. The baby was okay. So I'm talking to SIS. I'm like, in my bad Spanish, because he doesn't speak English, but he does speak Quebecer. And I'm like, how do you want to do this? Because in my head, I'm still stuck in fire department, USA. Okay, we need a backboard. We need all this other stuff. We need a helicopter come in. We need something. And he goes, we're going to get a board. And so he gets this board. He wraps it in clothing, ties her to the board so she doesn't have to bend, because that's the problem. She can't If she bends, she's going to be in horrible pain. They put her in a hammock, tie her to a pole, and six Quebecer men spend 2 hours. We're on a single track trail. It's nighttime because an hour there took 2 hours to get out to get her back to the mule, to, you know, the side by side, to drive her to Gran Oro. And it was crazy. It was a crazy night. But she's fine. She's okay. The baby's okay. It's all good. But,
so do you get to practice bushcraft where you're at there in Costa Rica? Yeah.
I actually have a channel, another YouTube channel called Bushcraft Costa Rica.
Okay.
And I'm on the forum Bushcraft USA a lot. And just, you know, stuff like, you know, working on friction fires and, working on, you know, friction fires, making shelters, you know, just because any excuse to be out in the woods, because I love the jungles and the mountains here. It's beautiful stuff.
So what is the wild? So you go out and spend the night in the woods as well? And
yeah, I'll do that. There's some places here in the mountains where you can, where they'll let you go camp, and go up there. Me and my son will. We sleep in hammocks though, because you don't sleep on the ground here. That's a bad idea.
So what kind of critters are on the ground?
Well, the biggest problem for me is the ants, because in the evening time or at night, the leafcutter ants will come out. One night I was, this was down in, on the Quebecer reservation. We were staying out, in the jungle, and I had my hammock set up. I had just gone to bed maybe 15, 20 minutes, and I'm hearing this crunching sound. What is that? I can hear it. And so I turned my light on, and I'm looking around, and my leather strap that was onto my satchel was completely covered in leafcutter ants, and they were going to town chewing up that leather. So anyway, and what had happened was, as soon as it got dark, they made their own trail, and they found my satchel. They found the leather strap, and they thought that was food. So, so for me, the only way I'll sleep out in the jungle at night is I'm in a hammock, I'm off the ground, and that also keeps the bugs off you too. So, because most, I mean, there are jaguar here, there are mountain lion, there are peccary. You know, there are a few big predators, but mostly I think what you have to worry about is the poisonous snake or venomous snakes. And then there's also a venomous spider here called the Brazilian wanderer spider. And it's highly, highly venomous, and it's aggressive. There's bullet ants that will sting. So yeah, just not stay off the ground.
But you don't have to worry so much about that. You run. You'll go out and run in the, you know, in through trails. I mean, you have to be careful. I mean, just like Missouri or Kansas or other places in the United States. Don't step on the snakes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, pygmy rattlesnakes. I mean, yeah, you have, you know, you just, we have a reserve about a mile and a half away from here, called Madre Verde, and, I'll run those trails, and they're, you know, use your eyes and just be as cautious as you can, but 99 times out of 100, you're not going to have an issue.
Mm-hmm.
So, what is fun though is we've actually had more issues here in the house, because we've had scorpions come in, and we've had, you know, in December there's a tarantula migration. All the baby tarantulas are moving, and so in December you'll get tarantulas in the house and stuff like that. So, but they're no big deal. You know, but it is funny though. 2 a.m. in the morning whenever your wife says, honey, honey, you need to come here right now. And you go out there and there's a scorpion about that big.
Now, scorpions, they're not, I mean, yes, there's a poison. They're kind of like wasps, aren't they? You don't necessarily, unless you got stung by a bunch of them, you could have a problem. But
and they're not like, it's not like they're aggressive. Yeah. You know, they're not like trying to come after you. So, but no, it's, but I really enjoy, getting out into the forest here. You see all sorts of animals. I mean, the sloths, the coati, which is kind of like a raccoon type animal, birds. Oh my Lord. Toucans and oral bindolo, parrots, all that stuff's here. Mm-hmm. So it's, and for somebody who enjoyed bushcraft in Missouri in the Ozarks, where I kind of knew all the animals and I knew all the plants, or I knew a lot of them, coming here is fun because it's all new.
Yeah,
and there's this huge learning curve of, okay, what is this? Or, well, right now where I'm sitting, there is a Mamoncino fruit tree, banana tree, orange tree, avocado tree, and there's another banana tree over there, because that's where our neighbor grows.
So what is you've got the challenge, you've taken on a challenge of moving to another country. So what is ahead? What kind of a challenge? You said Leadville maybe is on your horizon. You have anything else that's on your bucket list of like?
We're a couple years away from actually having full citizenship here in Costa Rica, and we kind of want to get that. There's some countries in Europe, North Macedonia and Kosovo and Lithuania that we kind of would like to see.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe spend a short time there. I would like, as far as running, I would like to get where I'm, like I said, I'm still got that itch for Leadville, and this right here would actually be a really good place to train for it. There's a mountain here in Costa Rica that is 12,300 feet high. It's called Chiripo.
Uh-huh.
And I'd like to hike that. But like I said, this, so yeah, a few things in the future. I need to get back out to the Quebecor Reservation. And just kind of anything else that might show up, you know, uh-huh, this, if an opportunity presents itself. So
cool. So people who hear this, if they wanted to touch base with you and find out, you know, where can they find you online? What's it?
Well, the course on YouTube is the Wandering Gringos, and also Bushcraft Costa Rica. If you're on Bushcraft USA, my handle's Rock Farm. And let's see. Oh, and also we have a Facebook page, the Wandering Gringos Facebook page.
Okay.
And basically the reason we made the Wandering Gringos is because whenever we were looking for all this information, okay, the expat forums have some good information, but also too, everybody's trying to sell you something.
Mm-hmm.
And you get some misinformation of, oh no, you don't want to go there. Go over here. I just happen to have some property, you know, or they'll tell you these horror stories about how, you know, oh, well, you know, all Costa Ricans are this way, or no, it's, so anyway, we started the Wandering Gringos because we wanted to show people what life was like outside of a gated community where you're living next door to other, you know, people who live here, other Costa Ricans. What it's like going to the store, what it's like, you know, paying your bills, what it's like just on a normal daily basis, and not trying to sell you anything. Mm-hmm. So,
and you intentionally stayed away from the tourist towns. So you moved into, you're kind of in a working class neighborhood with locals. You're not you're not surrounded by other gringos.
Yeah, no, there's all of our friends here are Ticos or Costa Ricans. The town that we live in is called a sleeper town. Basically, the people here either one grow coffee up in the mountains, or they live or they work during the week in Alajuela and San Jose, which is the capital, back and forth. So it's just it's a working class community.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's cool. Well,
and
I will.
They have been.
They're what?
They have been wonderful to us.
That's cool. That's cool. Well, you've made me kind of want to come visit Costa Rica sometime. It sounds like a great place.
Come on running. I'll take you up in the mountains. Love it.
I would love that. And I've seen your trail, you know, your videos from the trails. Like, that looks like a great place to run barefoot. You know, just this looks like a great barefoot running place. So.
It is. There's not a lot of sharp rock here. It's mostly rounded stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's good. It really is.
Yeah. Well, thanks. I'm going to end the broadcast, and I'll put links to your pages in the show notes as well. I'm going to end this. Thanks a lot. I appreciate. I'll end the official broadcast, and we'll talk in just a minute. So.
Okay. Sounds like a deal. Yeah.
Okay, the broadcast is over. So yeah, I've used this platform before and had some glitches with it, and so it's like okay, I've got a better setup, and actually this worked better than Zoom has. I mean, I had a little bit, the video had a little bit of a lag a couple times, but the audio stayed fairly consistent.
Awesome. Good.
Pleased with that. Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Trail Talk. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider giving us a 5-star rating and review, and don't forget to subscribe. That way you won't miss out on any new episodes. If you'd like to contact me, you can find me on Facebook as @UltramarathonMindset, or you can find me on the web at theultramarathonmindset.com. Remember, your mindset is the key to success in running and in life. And developing a strong mindset is a skill you can improve. Hey, thanks again for listening. I'll see you next time.